You're listening to Bob Tanum in the Garden on Talk Radio 560.
Let's see. This is show number 3,315. 315? Yeah, I think so. I have a guest coming up pretty soon here, and his name is Ed Livo. And my producer is David Farrow, and he will be at the buttons and at the call center there when you call in. 415-808-5600. I think that's right. 808-5600 is the number of my head. And so call in with your gardening questions. And Ed is a very long time friend. I've known him, since I was a little girl, I'm pretty sure. He was a salesman and all sorts of continuations of the Association of Gardens and Nurseries and Garden Centers. I've known him through that and through all sorts of other things. So he can explain that. Let's see if he is on the air now. Hi, Ed, can you hear me?
Yeah, Edie, I can. How you doing?
I'm just busting right into my guest here. I'm good. How are you? Your current job is with a company, Birchall Nursery, which is doing renaming as Tomorrow's Harvest, or how do you explain that?
Well, Birchall Nursery is actually one of the premier almond growers and stone fruit growers in the state of California. Mm-hmm. And the Tomorrow's Harvest .com is actually our retail site. Get some of the fabulous trees that we grow and fruit tree varieties that we grow and have them shipped right straight to your front door.
I see. Oh, that's wonderful. So it's kind of like an online store is Tomorrow's Harvest. And
yes,
the Birchall Nursery is who your local nursery could buy from if you have a special orders, that type of thing, or minimum orders. Do you guys do bare root and all that, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Plus, we sell to all the commercial growers as well. We have, you know, a very, very high demand almond variety that we've been selling now called the Shasta. And it's a self-fruitful almond variety that commercial growers love. And so we're kind of cranking on both sides, commercial and retail.
Well, that's fun. And then you have a side thing that you do, and I've seen some of your videos, Ed Able Solutions. Do you still do that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Edible Solutions, Ed Able Solutions is actually just my Facebook page. I have fun with it. I post all kinds of fruit videos up on there all the time. I post pruning videos. A lot of stuff that I also post on the Tomorrow's Harvest Facebook pages
Instagram,
mm-hmm. correct. Yeah, those will go on there, too, now. My past is I worked for Dave Wilson Nursery for years and helped develop their retail program and introduced all kinds of wonderful Zager varieties through the Dave Wilson program in my almost 20 years there. But, you know, I've done a lot of things since I left Dave Wilson, and now I've kind of come full circle, and Birchall Nursery is very similar to Dave Wilson, including that they have this wonderful fruit tree hybridization program that they've brought in all kinds of new varieties of fruit through. And so I'm having a ball just, you know, finding these varieties that nobody's ever heard of and just getting really excited about great tasting fruit again. So, yeah, I'm having a ball.
Yeah, I've seen some of your tasting videos, and they are very entertaining. It's like if you could be there with him, you could taste with him. But in the meantime, just watch him taste things.
Oh, yeah. Some people hate it. You know, they go, yeah, how do we eat in front of us? I said, well, you know, it's the only way I can tell you how excited it is. Exciting it is, you know. Jeez.
And if you can't be there, oh, fine.
Juice dripping down my chin or rolling down my arm, you know dang well it's good.
definitely. All right. So you go to tomorrowsharvest.com for all the fun stuff for buying direct, right?
Yeah. That's okay. It. Yeah. It's our retail site. And what do you think the most popular fruit that we sell is? You won't even believe it.
Oh, that would be interesting. Okay, so we're talking stone fruit or almond, probably.
Any kind of fruit, because you can get just about any kind of fruit, because we have almost every kind of fruit you can imagine on tomorrow's.
Well, I'm going to say peaches, but I don't know.
Okay, how about this? It's the Sharanui mandarin.
Mandarin? Wow.
Sharanui mandarin is the number one seller, and that mandarin is also called the sumo. So that's, you know, once people find out that, oh my gosh, the sumo mandarin is also is called a Sharanui, I think they come right straight to our site, because we're one of the only companies that actually is selling this Sharanui type mandarin. And believe me, I can't believe how many people buy the Sharanui mandarin.
Well, now I have to have one, so, you know.
Oh, they're great. I mean, they're wonderful, but there's so many wonderful mandarins now, and we have almost all of them, Gold Nugget and, you know, Page and Linova and Pixie. I mean, there's so many. This is the era of the mandarin, and there's so many great varieties of mandarins that not having one in your yard may be, you know, that may be a tragedy.
I guess it sounds like I need one, yes.
Yeah, oh yeah. They're,
I mean, my work partners gifted me another lemon, and I'm like, yeah, lemons. You know, I'm like,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. One lemon tree is about all you need.
It's all you need,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, because I have a lime as well, and we use more limes in my family. And I'll tell you, when that lime produces, and it's perfectly happy bears, you know, and I'm like, yeah, okay, fine, bear seedless. So my husband really likes it because it's seedless.
Yeah.
But he hates it because it's not green. And I'm like, whatever your problem is, you know, just get over
it
and squeeze the damn guy.
Yeah, it's green for a while. Well, you know, we get people.
It's green for a while, you're right.
And actually, we'll get people that actually call up and say, hey, you know what? You sold me a Meyer lemon because these limes have turned yellow. And I say, no. It's a Beer's limes actually turn yellow. Mm-hmm. Sorry. And they actually look very similar to a Meyer lemon when they finally do. So,
yeah,
you can hardly get
it. I know, it's confusing because once you start to harvest both, you're like, oh, shoot, which one's which? And you have to cut one open to see a little greenish in the lime and a little green. The flesh is a little green, you know, for the lime usually.
It is. Yeah. I have a multiple budded one in my yard here that was done when I was at Four Winds. And Aaron Dillon had done it, and he did a great job.
Aaron
and
Dillon,
I've got a two-in-one. Yeah, he's he's one of the principals, the owners of Four Winds Growers, which is a wonderful citrus grower as well.
I met him a few times, I think, yes.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah, back when.
Great guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How long have you known the Tanhams?
I tell you what, I thought of that, you know, when Bob passed. And the first time I met Bob was in about 1981. I worked at a company up in Santa Rosa called the Urban Tree Farm. I was running the Urban Tree Farm. Mm-hmm. And your dad called up, and he was interested. I think it was your dad and your brother at the same time. And
yes.
Your dad called up, and he was looking for redwoods. And I, you know, Urban Tree Farm was renowned for growing 15-gallon redwoods. And he bought a bunch of redwoods off of me, and I was doing the deliveries at the time, so I drove them down. And so that's when I met your dad. And I met your brother at the same time.
Yeah, and I think, my brother, let's see, I graduated in 79. Any summertime, my brother probably would have been there, except for the time that he went to, it was a Peace Corps or something like that. I'm sure he'll correct me at some
that
point.
I recall that as well.
Yeah, and so he was away from home for that length of time, but otherwise he was at Davis, and then he came to work for Dad after that, bringing all of his wonderful science ideas. And then he was the manager there, and then I didn't join the family business until, well, not that much later, actually, in the 80s, because I went off to San Francisco State in 79, 80, I don't know what I was doing, and then 85. Yeah, I was off at San Francisco State doing, I don't know.
I know exactly where I met you.
Where'd you meet me?
I met you at the NorCal show.
Ah, that would not surprise me.
And I can't remember, it's in the 80s, but I can't remember. Mm-hmm. It was probably 86, 86 maybe 86 at the NorCal
probably show. Probably 86, yeah, that sounds exactly right. Because I would have been with my dad by about a year, and then I went to the NorCal show then, and then I became... Oh, gosh. Then I was all involved in the chapter as well. And so anytime I was in the chapter, then I was into NorCal. That's a trade show for nursery personnel, just so everybody knows. And that happens
like
once
you and
a
my
year.
Dear friend Mary Welcher.
Yes.
You ran the thing.
Yeah, well, I didn't. Margo did, but yes.
Margo did, I know. But that was
Was just the flirter. Oh wait, well, you know what I was.
I do. Usually you were giving me a label.
Something. Yeah, it was fun. Very, very long time ago, though, and a lot of good times all the way through, because you've always been, you've kind of done this little cycle with us. It's like, okay, well, here we are. And you've been on the air with my dad for years.
Oh,
you know,
for
every
years.
Couple of years, he's been, you know, he has you call up and talk about what you're doing and that type of thing. So whenever you need to. So,
I even got your one of the radio hosts in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. I got your dad and Fred Hoffman together.
Oh, yes.
And I got them together at a trade show at the NorCal show to do a radio program together.
Yes.
It was really cool.
I remember that too, because I've been going through photographs, you know, and I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Oh, there's Fred. Oh,
yeah.
How cool that is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and there's Ed. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we got them together. That was back in the 90s, I think. You know, we got them together. That was really, mm-hmm. I thought, this is the Mason-Dixon line right here. The premier radio host for Northern California.
California.
That was great.
Way too fun. Absolutely. All right. So go ahead and plug the nurseries. Nurseries, you know, the two different parts of the nursery. I mean, obviously, if you're a nursery owner or a buyer, then you'd want to go to what website?
Well, you would just call the nursery, you know, get a hold of us at the nursery, at Birchall Nursery. I think we've sent out availabilities, and we're really active now, because, you know, there's only two bare root growers left, you know, that really are doing retail in the state of California right now, which is really sad, but it's the truth. You know, back, you know, 20, 30 years ago, there were four or five of us. Now there's two. And so there's Dave Wilson, of course. They do a marvelous job. And then there's the Birchall Nursery, and we do a marvelous job as well. And our focuses are a little bit different in that Dave Wilson, of course, is strictly fruit trees, bare root fruit trees and some potted fruit trees, whereas Birchall Nursery is a full service where we do bare root fruit trees, stone fruits, apples, peaches, plums, nectarines, and the like. But we also do persimmons. We do pomegranates. We do citrus, a complete line of citrus, a complete line of olives, a complete line of avocados, you know. So, you know, it's so as a retail nursery in the Bay Area, you can get just about anything you want from us. And we grow almost all of it ourselves. So, you know, I think that's the big difference. We're all good.
Absolutely.
I think Birchall just has a little bit more to offer.
Yeah, of course. Well, do you mind holding on? I don't know if you want to answer questions if people call.
Sure.
Okay, so let's take our break now, and then we'll be back, and then we'll get calls at 808-5600, or we'll just talk more shop. All right.
Cool.
See you in a little bit.
You're listening to Bob Tanum in the Garden on Talk Radio 560 KSFO.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Welcome back to KSFO. Bob Tanum in the Garden. This is E.D. Tanum as host, and I have Ed Livo as my guest. I'm saying your name right?
Correct.
Okay, good. I like that. We have a caller from Danville, and his name is Ed as well. So I've got Ed, and Edie. All right, fine. Hi, Ed. How are you today? Ed?
Hey there,
hello.
Ed. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Ed?
I'm great. Your parents had great taste in names.
I know.
Hi, Edie. Hey, what's your question? Yeah, hi.
Okay. My house backs into open space, and I'd love to plant some fruit trees, but I'm afraid of rats and birds. Any suggestions?
Well, I can tell you that there's probably nothing better to do if you are, you know, looking to control critters as being a problem than covering your fruit trees, and that means keeping your fruit trees low. So I'm a huge advocate of what they call high-density planting and pruning, and one of the things that I recommend highly is that you don't ever let a fruit tree get any taller than you stand with your hands extended above your head. And then that way you can net it, you can cover it, you can protect it against, you know, early spring rains if you're trying to get apricots in marginal areas, or, you know, if you're trying to protect against peach leaf curl, covering techniques have shown some great promise to use less chemicals. So, and then, of course, netting your trees to keep the birds off, or, you know, sometimes squirrels can be a little bit more, let's just say,
adept.
aggressive than other critters. So, but, I think covering techniques and keeping your trees low is probably the best defense in growing fruit trees in areas where critter problem. I'm backed up against a state park here. I have nothing in the backyard at all, so I keep all my trees. All my trees are roughly at about 8 feet.
Okay, we have ground squirrels. We don't have tree squirrels, so
they're not as bad, but they can still be a problem because they burrow underneath your trees.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
They can be, but you know, I mean, and that, you know, the ground squirrels are a little bit easier to trap if that's what you want to do, and if you're going to do humane traps and do catch and release, you know, then you take them into another county.
And you do it every day, and it becomes your new job.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's fact.
I mean, it's all nice to be humane, but unless you're going to be, you know, like some of these wonderful people who get out there and trap cats and relocate them or bring them to the shelters, you know, it's a very big job, and it takes all your days.
Yeah.
Any ideas to deter ground squirrels? Besides
I tell you what, not that I'm going to, you know, sound so clever that, you know, you'll go, wow, you know, what a great idea. My experience with ground squirrels is pretty extensive because it was our primary problem with growing budwood orchards. So in a 100-acre orchard, you know, our primary problem was ground squirrels, and we had some pretty aggressive eradication methods simply because they were such a problem and caused so much devastation. But That being said, I don't think that you're going to see that degree in the home garden. So, you know, I wouldn't be as concerned about, you know, the extent of devastation. And I'm sure there's people going, oh, Ed, you don't know what you're talking about. My yard is just peppered with holes. But I think that for the most part, ground squirrels are not one of the primary critter problems that I hear about, let's say, in relation to deer or raccoons. Those tend to be a little bit more bigger problems. Funny,
and
I have
rats.
Raccoons in my yards, and they never bother my fruit trees at all.
Mm-mm.
They come in my yard and they grub because I have so much mulch on the ground in my yard. All they want to do is come find the grubs. And they leave my fruit trees alone. So, hail mulch. Everybody should mulch.
Mulch is a very good thing.
It is.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you
very
much.
Yeah, and I was also trying to remember the thing that my dad always does is that I think he's really keen on the Tabasco sauce. And, of course, obviously, if you are near open space, maybe predatory attractor birdhouses. I'm not sure. But
yeah,
we'll have Wild Wing on later. Yeah. Well, he'll have that guy on later. He's a really busy guy putting up houses and such. So,
yeah.
But very cool stuff.
Those are great suggestions.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. Well, thank you so much, Ed, and Ed, and Ed.
Goes around there. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, thank you. So let's see. If you do have a call for either me or Ed Livo from Tomorrow's Harvest and Birchall Nursery, call us at 808-5600. That's 415 area code, 808-5600. Say if you have problems with your plums or that type of thing. I have a question for you, Ed, because I think you just did a series on pomegranates. And I have a pomegranate tree that I finally got from Eric. Oh gosh. Eric Hagawara.
I know who you're talking about.
And he had one in his growing grounds there, and I brought
Garden
one home.
Garden Delights, right? Garden Delights.
Yes. Yeah, that's his online thing. I don't know where his physical nursery is now. I'll have to talk to him soon about that. But he sold me a pomegranate, and I've been struggling with it a little bit because it was root bound when I got it. And so I've got it out of that. I've got it into a bigger pot. But, pomegranates don't really like to be in pots for a long time. Nothing likes to be in pots for a long time unless you're fertilizing them on a constant basis. So I just kind of wondered, do you have any recommendations on how to get pomegranates from a potted plant?
Well, as a matter of fact, I have one right out here on my patio. Some varieties of pomegranates are more suited to container growing than others. So one of the varieties that I really, really like for container growing is the sweet pomegranate. That one just seems to be, a real producer in a container. It doesn't seem to have any of the problems with, the breaking of limbs, because you get into the big varieties like Wonderful and Parfianca and some of these other that have enormous fruit. In a pot, they just don't ever develop the structure that it takes to hold these, big giant fruit in suspension in the air, and they'll end up bending the tree and breaking the tree in the pot. So they're just not suited to container growing in my estimation. But
yeah, and that's what I'm expecting.
You hit the nail right on the head, though. The most important thing when you're growing in containers, some plants just should not be grown in containers. You're right there, too. But the most important thing in growing containers is you got to remember it's like raising fish in a fishbowl. That means that those plants are totally dependent on you for water, for nutrient, for pruning, to keep them in dimensional size in relation to the pot. So there's a lot of things that are actually you need to manage as consistent growing different fruit trees in containers. And one of the most suited fruit trees for container growing, ironically, is citrus.
They
can be grown in a container we were in Italy a year before last, and, man, there were citrus in Italy that had been in containers for 100 years.
Wow.
So, and I've got two in my yard. I've got a Nagami kumquat that's been in a container for over 45 years, and or a Blanco grapefruit that's been in for the better part of 40 years. In all container growing, still produce like crazy, wonderful plants, so.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Cool. We're going to take another breather, and then if you don't mind hanging on, you're just fantastic to talk to.
Thanks.
All right, we'll be right back and listen to these messages.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
You're listening to Bob Tanum in the Garden on Talk Radio 560 KSF.
Ed Livo as my guest, and he is from Tomorrow's Harvest, etc. And he's here to help me answer questions and just generally have fun shooting the breeze here. So let's go to our next caller. Is Pat from San Francisco. You have a question about transplanting something. Hi, Pat.
Hey, Pat.
Pat. Okay. All right, Pat, call back, or if you're still hanging on, we'll get back to you. So let's go to Bill from Round Rock, Texas.
Wow.
Hey, Bill.
Hey, Edie.
Hey, there you are. Ooh, buzzy, buzzy.
What's going on, Ed?
How you doing there, Bill? Round Rock, Texas, you say, huh?
Yeah, I'm a transplant. I escaped northern Texifornia a couple years ago.
There you go.
But anyway, you know, now, did you say you had a potted kumquat that's 45 years old?
Oh, yeah. It's actually older than that. It's probably closer to 40. No, it's not 48. It's probably about 46. About 46 years old,
Because I started doing the math, and I ran out of fingers and toes, and I was thinking, you know, this Ed, he's probably been around a while, huh?
Hey, Ed's been around a while.
He's not older than he's not that much older than me, though. So you know.
I've been around a while. I've been in the nursery business for a better part of 48 years.
Yes,
right on. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what do they say? If you do what you love, you never work a day in your life, right?
Yeah, that's true. To be exact, I used to do a lot of work around Austin.
Oh, cool.
You have been around.
Into Fredericksburg, you know, up in the orchards up in Fredericksburg, and then all around San Antonio there. You know, I love that area. It's a great, great area.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Fredericksburg is the so-called wine country of Texas.
Right. There are peach growers up in that area, too.
Oh, yeah. You know, they have those stands along the side of the road, and it's always Fredericksburg peaches. You know,
That's it. They're very proud of what they do there.
They are. Hey, I tell you what. The reason I called, we lost some stuff in the big freeze, some trees in the big freeze of 21. And anyway, the one of the trees we replaced with was a ginkgo.
Okay.
And you know, we got a big nursery down here, Moon Valley, and I think they're based out of Phoenix area or somewhere in Arizona. But they gave they gave us moon juice and moon dust, but they're kind of generic fertilizers. I was just wondering if you had any tricks up your sleeve that would really make a ginkgo happy.
Tell me what happened to your ginkgo.
Well, no, we planted it. We lost oaks, and then replaced with one of the trees we replaced with was a ginkgo. And I was just curious, considering, you know, what those things end up doing. And gosh, I think they got ginkgo trees that are older than you.
Absolutely, yeah. They're considered a missing link tree because they're actually, you know, like they're actually a conifer. So they create a seed like a conifer. So they're one of the missing link trees. And my thought would be, are you having problems with it if you just planted it?
No, not really. I mean, other than it was planted in October last year, and it seems to have made it through the winter. And, you know, we've had well over 45 days in a row, over 100 degrees. So it seems to be doing okay. But if there was any kind of a, you know, special trick for a ginkgo tree to really, like I say, make it happy. Because what I'm really looking forward to in the next couple months is that bright yellow fall-time foliage. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, you get the cynical side of me then because here's what I would tell you. If the tree is doing fine right now, I wouldn't worry about it at all. I'm really an advocate of plant a tree in the ground. Don't put a bunch of garbage in the ground with it because really the tree has to exist in the soil that you've got there. It's got to exist in the climate conditions that you have there. And really from, you know, like that cynical standpoint would be, for me, would be saying, hey, if this tree isn't going to make it, I want to know early. I don't want to know, you know, like 10 years from now when it's huge that it doesn't like, you know, this area and for some reason it's going to die.
It relies on your fertilizing.
So I can put in something else. You got beautiful oaks down there too. So, and they're, you know, unique to Texas. But then the ginkgo's a widely adapted tree. I mean, it grows in a lot of different areas. So, and it sounds like you've already done what the people who sold told you the tree suggested you do, which actually gives you a certain amount of, you know, guarantee or whatever you will, you know, that you can go back. Hey, I used all your stuff, man, you know, and here, the tree's no good. You know, give me one of those great oaks.
Yeah. But, well, we had four oaks and lost three of them and replaced with the ginkgo, a autumn blaze maple, and a Texas. What am I trying to say? They turned pink in April. Texas redbud.
Yeah, the redbud. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are great. Those are great. Well, you got great variety.
Yeah, I wanted to go for something with a variety of color as opposed to just the oak. You know, Absolutely. Everybody in the sky, oak. Yeah.
But isn't there, I think there's a ginkgo in the Austin Botanical Gardens. I mean, if I'm not mistaken. So.
Oh, really?
I think there is. I'm not 100% sure of that, but I've been there a number of times, and I think, I think there's a ginkgo there. I think there may be a ginkgo.
I tell you, if anybody's curious about what we're talking about, if you Google 1,400-year-old ginkgo, in China, there's this tree in China that's 1,400 years old. That they unbelievable.
Found it. They found it. Yeah, in the middle of nowhere.
And that's where they built their monastery, I guess. Huh?
Right, and they've also found an example of the Metasequoia glyptosterboides, which is another weird tree that it's considered they're considered these. Trees that are kind of crossover between, you know, they're hybrids of conifers and deciduous trees. So they're just
very unique, long age trees. Cool.
Well, good talking
right, Bill,
with you, Ed.
Thank you.
All right.
And you too, Edie.
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Okay.
All right. Let's go back to Pat because she's called back. Hi, Pat. Are you hanging on still, Pat? Do you have a question about transplanting? Hello, Pat?
This is Carlotta.
Well, hi, Carlotta. Well, we can go to Carlotta. How are you? You're like waiting for Pat, too, I can tell.
All right.
Good morning.
I just wanted to put a little love because everybody's laughing, and I love to hear the laughter. The ginkgo, maybe if you massage the trunk a little bit, you know, rub it up and down. And said, welcome to the family. I'm
there
happy to have you growing here.
And there you go.
You know it is a money tree, so if it's in your backyard, why not take two or three or four $1 bills and hang it from the branches and tell them this is for your good behavior.
Yeah. If it's growing good, just go for it. Yeah, there you go.
I have
your ginkgo. I like it.
Somebody asked
it.
About colored things. I have a tulip magnolia that a boyfriend who's deceased planted for me, was knee high, and now it's over 12 feet, and I've had it planted right on Lombard. And all the tourists and all the local people come and take the pictures in February when it's all just a mass of beautiful, looks like pink roses. So tell somebody that wants something beautiful and pink, and it's quite hardy. I don't fertilize it or do anything to it. I just rub her body once in a while
and trunk,
tell her thank you for being here.
And
she's
what's
down
that tree?
On Anastasia. Her name is Anastasia, and she's down on Lombard, where all the traffic is and all the fumes. She's doing beautifully.
She's doing
what
all
my
the...
question is today is I've got some everything, roots for me. This loves to grow for me. And so I buy this sage at the market, and then I put it in water, and before I make tea out of it, it roots. So it's rooted, and I would like to plant it outside, but it has now got a light coat of white fungus on it. And I don't really want to, I only have pots to plant in outside, and I don't want to put anything outside with fungus on it that would disturb my other plants and flowers and maybe spread the fungus. I've tried apple cider vinegar and water mixture and rubbed it on the leaves, and it didn't seem to kill the fungus.
No, I mean, I would avoid that. Maybe get some fresh sage and try it again.
But I have two different bunches, and one is an old, you know, and one is, like you said, a new trial, and they both all get the fungus in it.
Yeah, it sounds like a mildew.
It's probably going to be a result of the whatever environment you're using to grow those in is more than likely creating the environment for the mildew to grow in, you know, which is
my kitchen.
Right. Yeah, that's it. And a lot of times, you know, your kitchen will generate a lot of humidity, you know, like if you're boiling water and you're...
What about taking that piece of sage and instead of rooting it in the kitchen where it seems to get fungusy or mildewy, whatever you call it, and just stick it in the ground in one of my pots and keep it watered?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I would do that.
Yep. All right. That would work better.
All right. I will try that. Mm-hmm. And... Edie, thank you for your courage, and I also miss Bob very much.
Yeah, I know you do.
Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Thank you. All right, bye-bye. We are going to take one more break, and if you could stick around, then Susie's a lot of fun. She'll be back on right after this.
This is Bob Tanum in the Garden on Talk Radio.
And this is Edie Tanum filling in for Bob Tanum. My dad had passed away, so I'm the new host for the show. And I have my guest, Ed Livo, on from Tomorrow's Harvest. Welcome back, Ed.
Okay.
Thank you. We have a call from El Cerrito. Susie, one of our friends, who I've been up in her apple tree, and she has an apple tree question.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Yeah. Hi, Edie and Ed. This very tree is making me a little nervous because, well, it's the first thing I ever planted, and I don't know how to prune. I didn't. I'm better now than I was back then, but I made a lot of mistakes on that poor tree, and it's at least 20 feet tall. But anyway, I have a couple of branches, small ones, that it seem to be dying. The leaves are all brown, and I'm thinking I need to go back to a major branch. Like it's maybe an inch in diameter. And I think I should go back and cut it where it branches off another bigger branch. Is that a good idea? Because I don't think I should just leave it and let it keep, because I think it's spreading whatever it is.
Well, a 20 foot, well, whatever it is, see that? I think the key here is whatever it is what you want to answer first. So, for instance, did your infection start during the spring, during blossom time?
I don't think so. I only noticed it during probably summer.
Summer, okay. So we've had two different incidents of fire blight this year. So one of them would be in the spring, which is typical. And then one of them happened in June when we were experiencing all that, you know, a lot of moisture in the air. You know, there was just a tremendous amount of moisture in the air. And so, oh, my gosh, I mean, some pears, you know, that I was working with just got blighted out and got fire blight real bad. The leaves all look like they got hit with a blowtorch.
Wow. These are just brown and curled, so maybe you say so.
Yeah, so you probably got fire blight. You know, definitely you want to cut those back. You want to get about maybe 6 to 10 inches ahead of where that infection is, and then you want to cut that limb out, and then you also want to then disinfect your shears in a bleach. It probably is the most available. Just disinfect your shears in between the cuts. So that you don't spread the inoculum. But the fact is that the damage is already done. And in answer to your question, yes, you can take it all the way back to the lateral limb that it comes off of. That would be fine. That's definitely one way of dealing with it. Do you know what variety of apple it is?
Yes, it's a Newton Pippin.
Yeah, great Newtown apple. Pippin. Okay, Newtown Pippin. So, yeah, you're about, what, month and a half away from, you know, getting ready to pick those, aren't you?
Yes. We actually learned how to store them at home in the refrigerator by expelling the gas from the plastic bag, and we had them through April.
Oh yeah, bet they store. Newtown Pippins store really, really, really well. They're great, old fashioned. They're the apple that replaced the Granny Smith. They should have never replaced the Granny Smith. it should have never replaced the Newtown Pippin. Newtown Pippin, I think, is a superior apple to the Granny Smith. But
it's a German variety, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's just not as pretty.
Yeah. It's just German.
Is, there's something I need to do so I don't get the blight elsewhere? Because now I'm looking, I see another branch that doesn't look too happy.
Do you have a pear tree next to it in the neighbor's yard?
It's dying. No, my tree, yes. That one is definitely dying, one branch at a time.
Yeah, okay. You got fire blight. And El Cerrito, let me tell you what, El Cerrito, all down into Berkeley, through Oakland and all that, I mean, those areas are just prone to fire blight. It's just a bad fire blight area. Really what you should do is probably try to plant varieties, always select varieties that have the most fire blight resistance. And believe it or not, the Newton Pippin actually has a certain amount of fire blight resistance. It doesn't get it as bad as some varieties. So, you know, you just kind of stay on top of it. Pears are just almost a waste. But there are a couple of varieties of pears that are interesting now that are fire blight resistant, such as the Warren. Warren is an excellent pear to grow, and it's fire blight resistant. Another one called Blake's Pride is a splendid variety to grow. And then another one called Potomac. These are all really, really good fire blight resistant varieties, and they should replace in the home garden Bosque and Bartlett and Comice and all of those, because they get so much fire blight, you know, in areas that are prone to it.
Now, was there a spray against fire blight?
No, not really. I mean, we used to use erythromycin, but, you know, that's not available to the home gardener anymore. And there's really just a lot of controversy as to whether or not it really even worked. Some people would swear that it did, and I would swear that they probably didn't have a bad fire blight problem to begin with.
It's like a pretend disease, and you make sure
sometimes, you know, that kind of stuff, you spray it, and then, you know, just the fact that it doesn't get it next year, you're sold on the fact that was the cure. But some areas you get fire blight just real bad, and other areas you don't. You know, that's just where it's at.
And yeah, down in Belvedere, we did. I had a lot of that.
My pear tree is so close to the apple tree. Should I cut down that pear tree since it's...
If you're battling your pear tree like I suspect you are, I'd cut it down.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, not that it's going to... I would assume that it will cut down the percentage of inoculum that is out there to infect the tree. I've got a video that I did on... I did it on a website on fire blight control and showing how to do fire blight control. It was on it's on YouTube on Nature Hills, naturehillsnursery.com. I did a video on identifying and cutting out fire blight some years ago. It's a good video. It'll show you what a fire blight lesion looks like. It might be worth going to take a look at. It's Nature Hills Nursery on YouTube, and just look in their videos, and I'll be there whacking on some pear tree.
I'll try to link it on Bob Tanham's website. See if I can look that up and make it easier for people if they go to bobtanham.com.
Cool,
that'd be easy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be great.
Thank you. That would be wonderful.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Susie, for the
thank
call.
You.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good luck with that, Susie.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to Nancy in Palo Alto. You have a question about clover?
I was wondering. I've heard you can plant clover under apricot trees, and I was wondering what kind of clover you should plant.
Well, I'm not going to be an expert on that, and to be exact, I'm not sure I agree with that. You can plant clover simply because, to be exact, I wouldn't disagree with that. As a matter of fact, giving quick thought, I was wrong. I wouldn't be against clover at all because clover is a nitrogen fixer. Clover definitely will provide, you know, nitrogen to the fruit tree. I think it's a great thing. But in saying that, what I'm more really concerned about people doing with their fruit trees now is mulching and composting and getting a mulch up on top of the surface to cut down evaporation, moisture evaporation, to extend the periods between waterings, keep that surface root cool. So I think that is contrary to growing clover underneath, because I'm not sure the clover would act as a water-saving application, because, of course, the clover would use water in itself. Air would go across the clover, and that would actually cause the clover to need more water. So I can talk myself out of it and into it at the same time.
What do you think about that, Nancy?
Can I use rice hay as a mulch for that?
Yeah, of course you can.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing.
Congratulations.
To say. Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time. Yep. Excuse
yes,
me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.